Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us today as we talk about financial matters, both myself and my co-host here, Pat. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself. Our show comes here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And so whether you've got advisors you work with now or you're no or not, we would like you to consider us another place for great information. Actually, yep. The place for information.
Another place.
Fair enough. All right.
Just the place.
But you know, it's interesting, Pat. So our show is really focused on helping people make wise choices with their finances to get to a point in life where they're financially independent, where work is an option, not an obligation. Or if they want to retire, they can retire with confidence that they're not going to be able to outlive their
money.
That's
the hope. Right? That's what we're trying to, that's our objective.
But there's countless places where people can get information.
Yes. Right?
I mean, you can Google retirement, Google investments.
Yeah. And
there's tons of information. I think our program, we try to decide, take some of this down into what's really applicable to you. What's the noise you should ignore? And what are the things you should pay attention to?
Yeah. And there are some basic philosophies that we live by, though. Right? One is that if you can go into retirement debt-free, if at all possible, go into retirement debt-free.
Yeah, it just makes it easier.
Money not going out is the same as coming in. We believe that you should not overweight your portfolio in any one sector. Just based on the fact that there's too much risk involved. The risk-return ratio is not there.
Well, we believe at retirement, for most people, this is the time to make sure that their assets are going to provide their income for them.
Yeah. So I read an article the other day. Who's the parent company of MoviePass? There was a parent company of MoviePass. Remember this MoviePass where you could, you know, pay $20 a month. And you looked at the business model and you thought, how is this ever going to work?
I had a friend of mine. I first heard about it. A friend of mine, he's a marriage family therapist.
Okay.
And he told me about, and it's like, what? Yeah, $10 a month, unlimited movies. I'm like,
how does that work?
What? He's telling me, he says, no, it's a great business model. I'm like, how is that a good, I don't understand it. I'm a financial guy. I do not understand. Because of all the whole database of people, now you can sell stuff. I said, well, maybe, assuming that they can attract enough advertisers. And why are we off on this topic?
Oh, no. So that's exactly it, right? You looked at the business model. Well, the stock fell over 90%. The parent company that owns MoviePass, the name escapes me, fell over 90%. I was reading an article about this senior. He's 71 years old who was complaining that he lost over $150,000 in that MoviePass and what a shame it was. And how it's going to jeopardize his retirement.
And you thought, whose fault is that?
That's exactly what I thought. I'm like, well, why?
How am I supposed to, feel sorry for you?
Yeah, so that all of a sudden that you wouldn't expect us to feel sorry if the stock went up by 10 times, which you obviously thought it was going to do well, or you wouldn't have overweighted your portfolio there enough to risk
It's like a guy takes his life savings and puts it in his suitcase and leaves it at the train station.
It's not, you know, that's...
That's one really unfortunate, but that's pretty stupid to put all your money in a suitcase and bring it to the train station.
Correct. This isn't society's fault. This is just pure stupidity on your part.
Was he blaming it on somebody else?
Yeah, it was like, I can't believe this stock fell by 90%. We'll do a little research. The business model was flawed. They're never going to be able to sell their research for that. But my point being is...
Yeah, what is your point here?
I started to say that we have some basic principles we live by. One is diversified portfolios, right? The other is getting rid of debt. The other is understanding your financial situation, making sure you can retire comfortably. I was out to dinner with two other couples in the last 3 weeks, both of them clients of Hanson McLean, the firm, not working with me. And one couple said, yeah, our advisor told us we can now retire that we're fine. They said, but we still have kids in high school and we're not ready yet. And the other couple said, we'd really like to retire, but our advisor told us it's 4 years off. And I thought it was interesting. They were sharing it out loud. And they said, well, what do you think, Pat? And I said, well,
what do you mean, what do I think? I don't know your financial situation.
That's what I said. I'm not your advisor, but if your advisors, you know, went through the 7 personal decision points, investment planning for retirement is not buying products.
No,
it's not buying products.
And it's interesting, Pat, because so many people see they have a problem. Maybe they need additional income. Maybe they have cash they're trying to deploy. They don't know where they know they should. And they look for a product for the solution.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, that's what on a lot of the financial blogs and
they're
websites.
They're selling products.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of radio shows are selling products.
Oh, yeah.
So
big time.
This, Scott, you saw this. Thought in the last few weeks that, you know, this Department of Labor, and we went on and on and on about the Department of Labor fiduciary standard last year and how we thought it should become the law, but it is not going to become the law. It looks like it is dead and it will be dead for a long time.
You know what?
This fiduciary standard.
I want to dive into this a bit. There's been a caller on hold for a while. Let's take this call.
Okay.
And dive into this in a bit here.
Got it.
If you want to join us, have a question for us.
Actually, we should probably take a few of those calls that have been on hold.
All right. If you want to be part of our program, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. Let's start off in Denver with Chris. Chris, you're with Hanson McLean.
How are you today?
Hi, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, how are you?
Super.
Thank you. So I had a question regarding savings. I have a 401 that I rolled over from a previous employer. So I don't do anything with that. My current employer doesn't do a match, so I'm maxing out a Roth. Is there any other way that I could contribute more to savings?
Are you not contributing to your employer's 401k?
I am not.
Not at all?
No. They actually, I haven't been there a long time, but they do a pension fund, but that was, can I do both, the 401 and as well a Roth?
Yes.
Yeah. Are you a union employee?
I am.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, you can. Yeah. So do you have the option of contributing?
I do. Yes.
But there's some income limits on a Roth.
Yeah, but it's are you married or single?
I'm married.
And how much do you make approximately? Family.
65.
Yeah, you're fine.
Household income.
Okay. Yeah, 65.
And how old are you?
49.
How much? So you're 49. You're contributing what, $5,500 to the Roth?
Correct. Yeah.
So almost 10% of your pay. How much are you hoping to save?
Actually, I was just going to try to do, you know, a couple $100 more if I could.
Yeah, you can use the company 401k.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And are you married with kids?
I am. Yes.
So your best bet is if they have a Roth option.
Yes.
Because you're in a tax bracket right now. Once you factor in your personal exemptions, your itemized deduction, you're going to be in a 15% federal tax bracket, as the majority of Americans are, 15 or lower.
Okay.
And so you would be best off you taking advantage of that Roth, like the Roth IRA, which I think is brilliant rather than a traditional IRA. But your 401k, okay. I would look to see if they have a Roth option.
And most do now. And if they did have a Roth option, I would make 100% of the contribution just through the Roth and the 401k just because it's easier than funding a Roth IRA. It's just a simplicity thing. And my guess is that there's probably a pretty good chance that they have a Roth option on that 401k.
So you're saying, would I not do the Roth that I'm doing outside of my employer?
That's correct. I would put in 15% of pay into the Roth option through your employer, and I would pick a low cost, which most of them, I hope, are. And they should be a low cost either ETF index or mutual fund. And I'd put a balanced portfolio. And at 49, I'd probably make it
that'll get more aggressive.
75% stock and 25% bonds and cash. 75.
Or maybe 80, even more aggressive.
Or 80%. And I would just do it through the payroll.
I like aggressive.
Okay.
Well, the fact is, and it's not that, it's not I didn't say aggressive because I'm all optimistic that the short-term future is looking bright for us because it's, who knows? And with the election coming up, I mean, who knows, right?
But when you're 49.
You got 15 years before you need, not before you're going to spend the capital, but before you even need income from the capital. And when you look at a life expectancy, you've got decades to let these dollars grow for you.
Yeah. So even if you wanted to move it up to 85 or 90%, fine with that. And the only reason you're using the 401k Roth option is it's just easier. It's just easier. Once that's fully funded, then go back and fund the Roth IRA. Now, in saying that, if they don't have a Roth option on your 401k, do exactly the opposite. Fund the Roth IRA and then fund the deductible 401k. All righty?
Okay.
All right. And let me ask you another question. Does your spouse work outside the home?
She very part-time. It's very, very minimal.
So, I mean, you can contribute to a spousal Roth rather than the 401k. So you're putting in $5,500 for yourself. That's the max. You can do the same amount for her.
As long as their income.
No,
can do it both. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I would actually do that.
And actually, I had considered that.
I would do that before your employer's plan.
Why?
Because it's a union plan. I'm just thinking, I don't think it's the lowest cost plan available. Based on what I've seen over the years.
Okay. I'll take that.
Okay.
The hard thing is we're just speculating.
Yeah, we have
here.
No idea what the plan is. If the plan's a phenomenal plan, then do that.
But the problem is most people can't tell whether it's a good or bad
choice. Most people I'd say do your employer's plan because they don't have the discipline, like Chris does here, to go out and fund a Roth on their own.
That's true.
Yeah. So say have it sucked out of your paycheck. You have the discipline.
I've had some good people in my life to get me in that direction.
You might have had something to do with it, so
that was pure luck.
Yeah,
good thing.
Okay. appreciate the call.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye bye.
Yeah. As I saw, it just happened. Good people in my life made it happen.
That was nice of them to say.
Yeah. Yeah. But the one of the great benefits of an employer sponsored plan. It's not really the tax savings. It's the fact that the money gets yanked out of your paycheck before you have a chance to spend it. And for most of us Americans, it is very difficult for us to save and to take the money in our checkbook and say, I'm going to set it aside and fund this IRA or Roth IRA. That is very difficult for most Americans. And if you're one that's always been saving, you're like thinking, what?
You don't understand.
It just is.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know what? We all have issues, right? So maybe you're a great saver, but you've got some other issue. We all have. So maybe if you're perfect in this matter and you're thinking, how can someone else not be perfect?
It's just easy to.
Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Stick around.
Are you a sports fan? Each year, teams spend the preseason getting ready for their big opening game. Well, retirement's a little like that. The difference is that instead of a yearly preseason, you spend your career getting your finances in shape for a retirement that could last 25 years or more. Think of Hanson McLean as the coach that gets you ready for your retirement season. For a free retirement readiness consultation, visit us at HansonMcLean.com today.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. If you want to be part of our Hanson McLean's Money Matters program, we're going to talk about the fact that this new fiduciary standard didn't go through, the impact that you might see personally.
Well, the fact that there was a rush to make investment advisors, stockbrokers more responsible.
That's kind of what I, so 1-888-2-HANSON is our number. We'll talk about that in a moment. We're going to take a call here first in San Diego, talking with Jamie. Jamie, you're with Hanson McLean.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
Well, I live in San Diego, and I'm looking to sell a rental property. And it was recommended to possibly set up a CRT, the Charitable Remainder Trust, to put the capital, I guess,
And
I'm just looking for a second opinion if that's the best place to put the money.
So let's walk through this real quick. How old are you, Jamie?
I am 51.
Okay. And what's the approximate value of this property that you're going to sell?
Or give away?
One of the two.
No, I'm going to sell it. And I think the range is probably 600,000.
And what do you have into it?
250.
Okay.
What's your overall net worth?
My overall net worth?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a really good question. Like
if you sold everything you owned and put it in a suitcase, how big would that suitcase be?
Probably in dollars.
Yes. Yeah.
Probably $1.3 million.
Okay. And
that excludes this rental?
Or it includes this rental?
No, that includes that rental.
Oh, okay.
No, it would be more than that, actually, because the house I live in, and I have that, and then that house, and then I have a condo.
So let me, do you have a, are you really involved with a charity and have a tremendous desire to fund this charity in your 50s?
Well, that's, you know, good question. That's still up for discussion of which charity it would go to, but there's a couple.
Are you charitably inclined? And we don't know you, Jamie, and you might not even be using your real name. Are you?
Do you give away a lot of your income now?
Try not to.
Okay. Okay. So the main driver behind a charitable remainder trust is you have to really have a charitable intent.
In other words, these work great. They work great when you say, "Boy, I love giving this organization. I'm trying to give this organization. How can I do this more tax efficiently?" Or, even more common, you know, I really have more assets than I need. I'm not going to spend all these assets during my lifetime. I've got this thing I was going to sell, but maybe if I can give it, but still have some income today, but I want it all to go to this charity when I die. That's usually when people, two things. One, when they have substantial assets, and not to say you don't, but I mean, they could certainly live without the asset. And two, typically when somebody's a little further down in life, a little older than 51.
Okay.
So why are you selling this property or giving it away?
Well, that was one of my questions. Should we be doing that, really? We're putting some money into it. The tenants just moved out. We're going to clean it up. I mean, we're investing, you know, close to $20,000 to clean it up to sell it. And then we're like, well, man, what if we don't want to sell it?
What will it rent out for?
Oh, it's in a very popular area in North Park. Probably $2,500 to $2,700 a month.
All right. So you're running about $32,000 to $33,000 in gross, and you're probably netting.
Why do you want to put this in a charitable remainder trust?
Someone told her about it, Scott. I don't think she wants to. She was calling us for a second opinion. Yeah. Is that fair, Jamie?
Yeah, that's exactly.
This is the last thing you should
do. Was it a financial advisor that was recommending the charitable remainder trust, or was it your accountant?
Oh, financial advisor.
Okay. Did they talk about life insurance at all?
Yes.
Okay, we're done. Forget the CRT.
We're done.
We're done. We're done.
This is just really strange.
Here's
the thing.
Was that by the way, was the financial advisor over the age of 65?
No.
Oh, because these were popular 25 and 30 years ago. They're not very popular at all anymore. The idea being, for the rest of the listeners, is that you're going to take this house. For Jamie, you're going to put it in a charitable remainder trust.
Which means
you're going to get a tax deduction for the full $600. You give all of it away.
You get a tax deduction for the fair market value, the current market value of the future gift. So you don't get the full tax deduction of $600,000. And she probably doesn't even need a big tax deduction.
Correct. You give away the asset, you get some tax deduction, then income comes off of it. You take that income, and that from that income, you pay taxes on it. Then you buy this big life insurance policy to replace the asset. Was that how it was explained?
No, it wasn't explained. It didn't couple like that.
All right. Well, in any case,
I can't wait.
Right now, you own an asset that presumably will appreciate over time, that has income that will also appreciate over time, should keep pace with inflation, right? That's what inflation is. So when you're 61, 71, 81, this should be providing higher and higher income. If you give this asset away today, you can receive some income, probably less than you're receiving today. That income is not necessarily guaranteed in the future. If things don't work out as far as the investments, that could be reduced.
And especially if you were buying a life insurance policy to replace the asset, it negates the whole thing almost completely because of the cost of the life insurance.
I think they could work great. Let's say you had...
We've done them before, yes, but not for a 51-year-old with a net worth of less than $2 million. Yeah. Dollars.
Yep.
I mean, we've done them,
And there
them.
Are still times they could work wonderfully.
But you're not the right person, nor do you have the asset level to justify. And it doesn't sound like you're clamoring to give some charity some money.
Right.
No, I think it's a bad call for you. I think that I would look at keeping the property.
Yeah, that was where I was leading, because we are kind of on the fence of, you know, should we rent it? It's just that it is, you know, it's an older home and
you could always sell it and do a 1031 exchange into another rental, or you can go to another market. You can sell this and say, I'm going to buy two rentals in Portland region or some other market that doesn't have where things aren't as expensive. So you've got those options as well.
Right, but if you go to do the 1031 in another market, or is that still in effect with the other market?
Yeah.
You have to buy it.
Okay. As long as you do like exchange. So you can get rid of this, say, you know what, this house is old. Let's sell this house and exchange it. Let's buy a different piece of property and rent that out. I would certainly look at doing that before I gave this away.
Yeah, that was one of the options. I really appreciate it. This is great information.
Helpful. Well, thank you. And Jamie, moneymatters.com/book.
Scott's book.
Scott's book, Personal Decision Points. Seven
it's
steps.
It's a page turner. Matter of fact, if you have insomnia and you have trouble sleeping at night, that might help.
I'm going to say it here. Quentin Tarantino has optioned the book.
a movie. But he's going to mix up the way the chapters go. You won't know where you are. It'll be confusing the whole time.
It will.
So, Pat, the Department of Labor.
So this DOL rule, and you might have seen it in the papers, and you know we've harped about it for years because we thought it should become the standard, which is you can use a commissioned broker and they don't have to act in your best interest. They can act in their best interest, not in your best interest.
As long as it's suitable for you.
Whatever that means.
Well, that's a good point.
I don't know what suitable means.
It's not going to hurt you, I think.
Well, and not going to hurt you to what degree? Too bad?
Well, it's a subjective term, obviously.
Suitable.
Yes, it is subjective. And it's
right, suitable. This food, how is the food?
Suitable.
This restaurant. Well, is it safe to eat? Yeah, it's suitable. It's just suitable. No, I know, but is it safe to eat? Suitable.
Is it good for you?
That's suitable. So what this suitable standard is, whatever it means, we don't know. How much damage can you do? Versus...
But that's the standard if you're a broker at one of the big firms, if Merrill the person Lynch, is Morgan Stanley.
If they're receiving a commission, that's all they have to lay under. Versus a fiduciary where the advisor has to put your interest above their own.
A legal obligation.
It doesn't mean that they can't charge for their services. They will charge for their services. They'll disclose what they're charging, but they have the legal standard to put your interest above their own, which means they can't sell you one product that's better for them and worse for you.
So here's what we saw. The Department of Labor started pushing this new standard, not new standard, but new to these brokers. Back in 2014, it looked like it was going to become law. So we saw certain products, the sales of those products start declining because people are like, oh.
They fell because everyone thought that, you know, these things I won't be able to sell them anymore because it'll be against the law.
Or against, it'd be hard to justify with the fiduciary standard. Okay. One of those is variable annuities. Now, there was a time when some variable annuities were actually okay way back in the day. Today, they're just so expensive.
Yeah, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you could make a justification for some of the variable annuities. Today, very expensive. Very expensive.
So but now we're seeing
indexed annuities as well, which has been really difficult to make a justification for them ever.
Well, index annuities, it's just they broke their quarterly sales record this last quarter.
Because it looks like...
Well, you don't have to be
the fiduciary, you can be a commissioned salesperson. So index annuities in the fourth quarter of 2015, after years of decline because of a fiduciary standard, broke a new record of selling $32.1 billion of indexed annuities in the second quarter.
$32 billion. And an index annuity, there are costs involved. You just don't see them. You're giving the insurance company your money. It's frankly in a black box because you don't understand it.
And the person selling it
probably didn't really understand it.
Doesn't have to have a securities license or even an understanding of a complex
and
security matter.
And your principal's locked up for years. It's locked up. Matter of fact, it's locked up so long that it's any market cycle would go through that market cycle in that lockup period.
It has been historically, yes, through that. So what this comes down to is work with the fiduciary. I mean, this tells you that people that are non-fiduciaries are not going to put your interest in front of their own at all times.
No, they probably will not.
Yeah.
They might, but yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
So I would like to see a standard across the whole industry.
Yeah.
And the Securities and Exchange Commission is making a push on this, but I have a feeling that the lobbying groups are too strong.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
But if you work with an independent registered investment advisor today, they have a legal obligation currently to put your interest ahead of their.
And we hope forever.
Yeah. Well, probably will be forever.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, we're taking a quick break. Stick around more for Hanson McLane's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLane's Money Matters? Visit hansonmclane.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLane's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLane.
If you want to be part of our program, 1-888-2-HANSON is our contact number, 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, it's 888-242-6766. Before we get back into the program deep here, I just want to, we haven't reminded our listeners a while that this show is available via podcast. I believe now we have more people listening to the program via podcast than we have on through radio.
Do we really?
Subscribers. Last I looked, I forget what the number is, but
no,
we've
good.
Got lots of subscribers and people all over the place are subscribing to it. So if you have yet to subscribe to our podcast and you think it might be beneficial to you, we just want to encourage you to go do that. If you just, when you go to your whatever you, most likely you're on an iPhone and you're going to the.
Or wherever you download your podcast from.
Yeah, most likely you're on an iPhone. So if you just search Hanson McLane, you'll find Hanson McLane's Money Matters there. And if you're a frequent podcast listener to this program, please rate us. We'd appreciate a rating.
Yes.
And if you think of somebody that could also benefit from this, forward it on to them as well. That's how I found most of my podcasts.
Well, that's actually, you turned me on to a new podcast last week that I listened to.
Well, good. I'm glad I did that.
Yeah. My kids listen to a lot of podcasts. And my kids' friends, actually, a number of them have told me they actually listen to our podcast.
Do they
which
really?
Is really kind of, well, they're business majors in college and I don't know.
Do they?
I think they might be sucking up.
Well, some of it's sometimes when it's like I have a family member. He basically wants to do what I do. So he's like, how do what you do, Uncle Scott? And I'm like, well,
yeah.
There's a lot. I mean, odds are, it's not quite as easy as just
yes
showing up and suddenly you're like, got this firm with 100 employees.
Where'd you buy that suit? I want to do what you do.
That's almost it.
But, where'd you get that suit?
Yeah. Hey, Jeff Bezos, how'd you do that?
How'd you get there?
Elon Musk, how'd you do that? You got the car going,
you got
solar,
the space thing, the solar, the Twitter. You got it all.
You've got the Hyperloop thing. How do you? Did you get to share with me your secret? That's all I need to know.
That is true. Yeah. So my son's friends are like, "Oh, listen to your show." And I'm like, "Oh, great, super. Go drink your cheap beer in the garage with your friends."
That's what you're. Your son's friends do come to your house and drink cheap beer?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I was buying the good beer. No, I'm joking.
No. Actually, I don't buy them the beer. They buy their own beer. I'm not buying these kids
They come
beer.
To your house and drink beer?
Yeah, they come to drink beer when they're, they'll go to college somewhere. They come home, they drink beer.
Like on a Tuesday morning or what?
No, no, like on a Friday night. Oh. And then I won't let anyone drive. So then they just the whole night. And then I go to my room and I take some melatonin to help me sleep because they're loud.
It's because they've been drinking.
I know what they're doing. I don't want them to drive. They're all like 21 years old, right? You know, you get it, right? I get it.
Oh, I'm amazed, and we'll get back to the financial topic. So my oldest is, I've got 22 and 20. I'm amazed the things that I'm comfortable with, the decisions my kids make, some of the things they do, I'm amazed how comfortable I am with.
Why? What does that mean?
Well, it means when they're young, you have so much influence, you pretty much control their lives. And as they get older, they have more and more control. And then one day you realize you have no control, maybe some influence, no control. And if I want a relationship with my kids,
you got to just kind of,
I just let them make, yeah. And if they want to ask their dad for an opinion on it, I'll give them their opinion. Other than that, it's just,
but that mom's,
that's what I'm amazed.
But
that's
the mother's job is to tell them what to do. I mean, it's your job. The mother's going to tell them regardless of what. Their mother's gonna.
No, she'll tell me what the things.
Yeah, I got that. But you're the guy that like 8 years ago recommended
to fix the kids or something.
That you recommended a book to me called "Letting Go and Liking It."
Yes, setting you and your teenager free. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah,
you didn't like the book, or you did like the book.
It was all right. You know,
it had a few. Yeah, it's just,
but again, I'm not gonna change much. You know, anyway. But this is a financial. I'm sorry. This is a financial show, so we should get to that.
All right. Well, why don't we go to the calls here? They're thinking, why are we talking about?
I don't actually know where that conversation started.
I don't either.
Oh, we were talking about podcasts and my kids. There's a recap for you.
And podcast, Hanson McClain's podcast. My point was go to hansonmcclain.com.
And download the podcast and share it with your college-age children.
Your college. Hey, son, time to start thinking about your retirement. I actually think it's odd when there's someone who's 22 thinking about retirement. My daughter's college roommate wanted to retire at like 40 or something like that.
Oy.
I'm like, you're young and idealistic. Aren't you supposed to go out and figure out how to save the world and all that stuff? I mean, or make your fortune or whatever your hope is at that period of time.
Yeah.
Why do you want to think about quitting? To do what?
Yeah, when you're 18, when you're 20, you actually already got your eyes on the end. Yeah,
I know.
You're like, what?
How about figure out the journey so you can enjoy all those other things you have, those things you want to do.
Before I start the journey, I'm going to
have... Before you need a hip replacement.
Yes.
I had dinner with a couple, and we'll get back to this. This is on financial stuff, though. They're both about 31, 32, 30, somewhere right in there. And I'm talking to them, and they'd taken a year off work. And it was part of their plan, and part of their financial plan. They worked out of college. They saved up some money. Their plan was to take a year and travel the world. They did that. Now they're back at their careers.
And are they having kids now? Is that all on part of the...
I don't know about...
Is that all written in the Franklin Planner as well?
Franklin Planner, that's my whole point. You're back to, 1990, the physical plan. No, but just, I think this generation looks at... I think they might look at our generation...
A little differently than...
Or their parents, or our previous generations of, I'm going to work so I can retire one day. And they're thinking, maybe I can figure out how to have those great benefits of retirement along the way.
Through the whole chapter.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how it all works out for them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know what I wanted when I was 22 in college.
A girlfriend.
That too.
Really bad.
How about any friend? Why does it have to be a girl? I wanted not to be poor.
Well, every college student is not every college student.
That was my objective.
All right. Let's go to the calls here. To join us, if you want to be part of Hanson McClain's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. We're talking with John. John, you're with Hanson McClain.
Gentlemen, hello.
Hello, John. Thanks for joining us.
I've been retired for a couple of years, and I have a California state pension, have Social Security, and which is taxable at about 85%. Anyway, I want to build up about a $50,000 emergency fund. Oh, I have no debt.
Okay.
Except to the Grim Reaper.
Okay.
And anyway, I've got about $20,000 now. So I'm looking for Well, I have the money. I'm building it up with Social Security, the emergency money. And
what kind of an emergency might come up that this would be used for?
Oh, that's, I don't know, surgery.
You just feel more comfortable having a little more cash. And do you have money in a 401k or that sort of thing?
Yeah.
How much?
Oh, about 400. So.
Okay.
And how old are you?
68.
Are you taking distributions from your 401k yet?
No, I thought wait till 70 and a half, right?
Yeah. Are you married?
No.
And you're living on your monthly pension without these distributions comfortably?
Well, so far.
Okay. And tell me why you want to get this emergency fund.
I guess so I don't have to sell mutual funds at a loss.
So this leads to the next question: is how is your?
Because a lot of people view emergency fund to have it in the event. It's oftentimes when someone's working, they'll have an emergency fund in the event that something happens, they can no longer work, they need the income to keep coming in. But if you have a pension, Social Security is probably replacing what your income was before.
So how is your 401k?
But there's nothing wrong with it, though, John. I mean,
so how is the money in your 401k or is it in an IRA? The 400 grand.
It's IRA now.
Okay, and how is that allocated?
Well, I'm probably I think I've got a target now. I'm comfortable with about 60% in equity. I've got too much in, and they're all funds. They're not, I've got a target fund, but I'm comfortable with about 60% in equity, but I've got too much in international.
Oh, God. So how much of this $400,000 is in the target date fund? All of it?
Yeah. I'm taking it out.
Oh, you are? So
I don't want it. With bonds the way they are and everything, I just think it's not to be in a good to be in it. Well, the target dates, I picked the target date that would serve me with 60%.
Okay.
Got it.
Yeah, 2035.
And sometimes those were great, but on this large of account, you can probably customize.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
So I think what Pat's thoughts are is
I wouldn't, quite frankly, I'd build a portfolio that was, if you're comfortable with 60% equities, and you obviously have years and years of experience investing because these dollars didn't occur overnight, I'm okay with that 60% equity position. I would actually hold the rest in short-term bonds, cash. But I wouldn't worry so much about the liquid account. The problem I have with it now is because it's all in a target date fund, that you going in and taking $40,000 out,
you're forced to sell equity.
You're forced to sell equities, but not really, because what you could do is take the $40,000 out and then sell the target date fund and move it from a 2035 to a 2040 and actually still keep the 60-40.
Theoretically, yes.
Theoretically. Yeah. You could do the math. It wouldn't be that difficult. I appreciate the fact that you want the liquidity, but you have no need for an emergency fund. You've got an emergency. You have a $400,000 emergency fund.
You're going to have to, in 2 years from now, you're going to have to be forced to take in some distributions.
Right.
Of approximately $12,000.
The first year.
$14,000 the first year. So in this situation, I'd actually peel back that target date fund and buy some low cost there. And I would even keep, a little bit of it in, if you wanted to keep it in cash or close to cash, you could do that inside the IRA and not worry about the.
But it's going to eventually. Well, what I was thinking was, I don't know, maybe this is, see what you guys think. I was thinking that like a municipal bond, because I have, I'm about 25% federal marginal and 6% state. And like I said, the Social Security is taxed. So I thought, well, maybe I should put it in a California short-term limited.
Yeah, there would be nothing wrong with that. It's the challenge is in the yields today are so low.
Yeah.
And your tax bracket isn't really high enough to justify. It wouldn't give you
close there,
but it wouldn't give you significantly.
But I don't know.
Return.
I wouldn't feel comfortable having 100% of my emergency reserves in California munis, though, either.
Yeah, yeah, that, well, right. Money market, though, I'm making a few pennies a month on.
Yeah, nothing wrong with and as low as CD rates are. If you look online, you can get about a 1.25%. And you might say, well, if it's for emergency reserves, usually you'll lose a little bit of interest, but it's negligible, really.
Maybe. Yeah, actually, you can get a money market account, CD a bank insured money market account that's yielding 1.1% on an online account. Yeah, you go to Synchrony Bank or. Am I allowed to say these things on the air?
I don't know.
Yeah, go to Synchrony Bank.
We're not endorsing any of them.
Yeah, yeah, but they're FDIC insured. And just go online and you're going to, you'd be better off taking those dollars and actually, if you wanted to, I wouldn't be opposed to this idea at all. Just take another $20,000 out and put it in your IRA at one of these online banks and you'd be better off doing that and
of your IRA, having a separate IRA.
A separate
earmarked
IRA earmarked for
the
emergency
part of it,
funds.
We're looking at ourselves saying, here you're 68 years old, retired, and you're talking about saving money, right? And I get it. That's why you have these dollars.
That's why you have money. You show me someone that doesn't care about money, I'll show you someone that doesn't have it.
I mean, that's the challenge, right? So you hit so your whole life you've been focused on saving for tomorrow, right? Saving for the future. And now you're here. It's hard, right? It's a change in mindset.
Right.
And I think that's that's what Pat and I kind of looking at each other. It's like, yeah, you can do that.
If you were sitting in my office, if you were sitting in my office, I'd build a portfolio with ETFs, exchange traded funds, and mutual funds, and I'd have a 60-40 portfolio.
If you wanted to have some carve out from it, you just carve out a portion of the IRA.
You just carve out, or if you said, okay, I need 20 grand in the next 3-4 days, we'd look to see in the rebalance of the portfolio to make sure it was consistent with your needs and go from there. But I think what you should do is
enjoy
not worry about it.
not really.
I think what you should do is not worry about it. And when those required minimum distributions start coming out, spend it. Spend it. Spend the $12,000, $13,000 a year.
I mean, unless you've got, say, some child with a need that something we haven't learned about here. Other than that, I would agree with Pat. We really don't think that you need to be saving your Social Security for the future.
So I appreciate the call, John.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Hey, glad you called, John. And let's continue on here. 1-888-2 Hanson. We're talking with Cindy. Cindy, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Cindy.
My husband and I have retired early, partly spurred on by his ability to collect an early pension.
Okay.
And so my question is related to his pension options and whether the single life option might be the best choice for our circumstances rather than some of the survivor options.
Okay. So he hasn't chosen a pension yet.
Well, he has, and we have until the end of January, basically, to set it in stone. Yeah.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about
yourself. It's a non-inflation. Okay. Well, he's 58 and I'm 53. This pension is non-adjusted for inflation.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. And we do have a pretty large nest egg, actually, at least in relationship to our lifestyle.
Tell us about it.
What's a ballpark then?
It's close to $3 million.
Okay. And how large is his?
And our expense. Oh, okay. So the pension for a single life is $45,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a 2/3 survivor that's $39,000 a year, and then $26,000 for the survivor.
Okay.
And a 3/4 survivor that's like $38,600. And then almost 29,000 for the survivor.
And does it have a pop-up provision on it? I don't know if that matters, so we should get that far into the weeds. We won't get that far into the weeds. Okay, so it's either 45 or 39 with a 28,000 in survivor benefits. And you have approximately $3 million of investable assets. Does that include real estate?
No, actually, our house is paid off.
So in other words,
and we have no debt.
You don't necessarily. You're not going to be despondent financially if he passed away early, right?
So
you're looking at what's the best financial decision. This is a purely financial decision.
So here's the the numbers are all the same. So actuarially,
well, I don't know. Is the survivor benefit based upon your age, or is it just standard regardless if you were 53 or 63 or 33?
I think it's just standard. I'm not quite sure.
Because there's a five-year exactly, age spread here.
Yeah.
That they're factoring in, it's probably this. They're probably factoring that she's 58.
Do they have a lump sum option on the pension?
No, they didn't.
Okay.
But there is a four-year certain, I think is what they called it.
Yep.
So, like, if he were to get hit by a bus, mm-hmm. you know, between now and the fourth year, there was a certain, you know, amount that would go to the survivor, no matter what you pick.
Yeah.
So that, or, I mean, if you pick a single life, I guess.
So what are you leaning to do?
What I'm leaning to, I feel comfortable doing the survivor only just because it's not inflation adjusted.
I mean, the single life
and
only?
The single life only. Well, all of them. None of them are adjusted COLA, you know, adjusted. Mm-hmm. And so I feel okay with it because I feel like, you know, we could allow our portfolio to even grow more. And for instance, if there's a downturn in the market early on, especially, we wouldn't have to go into our funds as much because our expenses are only about like $60,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And if something happened and he passed away, your life's completely different anyway, and you have financial assets to continue forward.
How's his health?
Yeah. It's excellent. We're both real healthy.
And you've got a long lifeline in both sides of the family?
Pretty much, yeah. But I think it's more maybe average. I don't know, 88 to 90.
It's a personal decision, right? Because I tell you what I would do, right? I would take the joint survivor. That's what I would do.
You mean if you were Cindy's husband in this situation?
Yes. I would take the joint survivor.
Why?
Just because you don't know. You just don't know. You don't know. And it's not going to change their lifestyle one way or the other. That's why. So what happens is...
Another option is you take the single life and you go out and buy some life insurance.
Some term life insurance for 10 or 15 years? I don't like that. If you had a lump sum option, you'd take the lump sum with their financial situation almost always. Your net worth is high enough.
Yeah.
But from an actuarial standpoint, those numbers are the same in most pension plans. So unless you guys know the days you're going to die, you can't make a good decision because actuarially, if you look at the math,
those are only
the
averages.
Numbers are all the same. They're just averages, right? That's how they determine them. I mean, they didn't dream up this joint survivor. They actually looked at actuarially what would happen.
If you take the single life and your husband lives longer than a normal life expectancy, you made the right choice.
Shorter?
Then you made the wrong choice.
But the point being is that we're talking about a $6,000 spread, and they've got liquid net worth of $3 million. What is that, 0.2% on that?
A year. You're talking,
a year.
Yeah. It's
insignificant. The $6,000
difference. It's buying insurance. It's no different than buying life insurance.
Correct.
You're buying insurance on that pension.
But you're buying it with pre-tax. So you're not going to make... So, Cindy, at the end of the day, you're not going to make a bad decision, right? You've made great decisions. You didn't get here by mistake.
That's right.
Right? So when... Uh-huh. Unless we knew the day you were going to die,
And both you.
Yeah. And I can just tell you what I would do personally. I don't know what Scott would do, but if I was your husband, I would take the joint.
Well, I own life insurance on myself that I don't really need. In other words, if I died today, my wife would be fine without the life insurance.
Yes.
But I have the life insurance.
Because
I'm still working and I just...
So, Cindy,
feel better about it.
If you think you should take the single life, I know you called here hoping to get an answer, and you just walked away saying, "What a waste of time that was."
We don't know the answer. We won't know until one of you passes away,
and then we can tell you whether it was a good decision or not. I know that either which way you're gonna go, you're gonna be fine.
If you needed the income, it'd be an easy.
Oh,
decision.
That is. Oh yeah. If you needed the income,
you didn't have any other assets. It'd be simple.
It would absolutely be a joint survivor. If you actually needed the income. But That's why it doesn't really matter that much. You're talking about $6,000 a year and a $3 million, what you have is $3 million investable assets.
So
and
Pat's point is, as a percentage of your overall net worth, it's worth ensuring that this will continue on through Cindy's life.
That's my point.
But it doesn't matter.
But it doesn't really matter.
But you can also say it doesn't matter because the reality also, Cindy, let's face it, should something happen to your husband, he passed away early, your retirement's different.
Yeah, it is.
Your life's different. I mean, right? That would just be very different than what you'd planned and hoped for and dreamed for. That's just the reality. Yeah. And you'd have to work through that. Mm-hmm. And you'd have plenty of assets to work through. So you can go either way on this.
So I hope that helped.
Sure.
We didn't give you an answer, did we? There's no right answer.
There's no right answer.
Do whatever makes you feel the best.
Now, and only because you have plenty of assets. If there weren't assets in the household, you almost always take a joint survivor if they're not, assuming everyone has a normal life expectancy. And it doesn't affect any of your other benefits. But my personal preference was take the joint survivor. Don't worry about it. Right?
Either way, it's not going to impact your life. Well, unfortunately, we are about out of time today at Hanson McLean's Money Matters. If you haven't been to our learning library in a while, I encourage you to go to our website. We've got tutorials. We've got guides. We've got videos. We've got, a variety of different things on... I mean, you name
it financial. Pay off your mortgage. Save for college.
Social Security.
Should I buy or lease a car?
All kinds. I don't know if we have that one, do we?
I think we do.
Oh, well, what do you know? I don't think we do. Mostly financial topics.
We don't.
Should I go surfing or go to... Anyway, there's a lot of great stuff. We're out of time. Join us next week. This has been the Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.
What matters most to you? Probably family and friends, but what else? When you're in your 20s, it's one thing. Your 30s and 40s, another. When your 50s creep in, you're older and wiser, but the sand in the hourglass of your asset accumulation stage has shifted. Right now, you're listening to Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Sure, they've been hosting Money Matters for 20 years, but they've been CEOs of Hanson McLean Advisors for longer than that. If you're over 50 and you've been saving for retirement, you're probably wondering how your preparation stacks up. Here's what you should do. Go to HansonMcLean.com and either schedule a free consultation with one of our credentialed advisors, or if you're not quite ready for that, maybe take a look at some of the helpful materials in our learning library. You'll see tutorials, podcasts, and articles on things like Social Security, retirement planning, investments, and a whole slew of other things that can help you retire well. Over 50 and starting to see retirement up ahead? Make sure you do it right. We can help. Go to HansonMcLean.com today.